You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Time to get some of that Monday NBA basketball talk here on Drive Time Sports. Look forward to this each week. And, of course, when we do talk NBA, we got to bring on our guy, James Holas. He's our NBA analyst. And with everything happening in the league ahead of Thanksgiving weekend, James, always a pleasure to get you on as we can talk about a variety of storylines. I appreciate the time.
On court and off the court, there's a lot going on. As an NBA fan, we got to love it. But I almost feel like we're hitting the dog days of the season already, and we're not even in December. But, let's jump into it.
Yeah, I feel like right now is a pretty interesting time. We are hovering around that 20-game mark, and it seems like over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, as long as you and I have been talking NBA basketball, we always talk about that 20-game mark. There is some significance behind it, and I think you've always nailed this. I think the analysis is spot on. Once you hit 20 games, we kind of know what teams are, right? I mean, anyone can get hot. Anyone can come out of the gate and start, 8-2, 7-3. And we think, yeah, this team looks pretty good. By the time we get to 20 games, typically teams come back down to earth. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, a young team can come out, and just off of pure energy and excited for the season, they can come out and run off some impressive wins. An older team might take a little time to kind of ramp up as their guys ease into the season. A brand new team, right? You had a couple new guys, maybe a big name free agent, and all of a sudden you're getting adjusted to each other. So it's going to take time for that. That's I'm with you. About 20 games is when a team kind of settles into who they really are, and then after that, like by game 25, game 30, those the next 10 games after this first 20 can kind of show you who a team is.
True or false? Right now, 4 out of the top 5 teams in the league are coming out of the Western Conference. True or false?
I got to 4 out of 5.
Because right now, this is the way I see it. OKC is the cream of the crop. I put the Lakers, Nuggets, Rockets in my top 5, and I guess I'll put Detroit, maybe. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It seems like the West right now is extremely top-heavy. I think you can make a case for some of the other teams out of the Eastern Conference. But the fact of the matter is, James, when someone wins 12 games in a row like Detroit, they've earned the right to say they're a top-5 team in the league.
Yeah, my mistake was I was looking at the West thinking, all right, which of these four, blah, blah. But you're right. I look at the East, and I see Detroit at 14-2. Toronto's a nice surprise, like we just talked about, young, playing together. Their defense and offense, they're really connected. But they're the number 2 seed right now in the East. I can't see that holding up. Cleveland's starting to scuffle. They're scuffling a little bit compared to last year. I got to say true. You're right. Right now, I don't think the Lakers are maybe as good as their record, but they're still really good. OKC and Denver, I think OKC is 100% the cream of the crop. Brother, the other day, they scored 54 points in less than 17 minutes of gameplay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the Thunder, we're not quite there yet, but I think, give it another 3 weeks. If they keep on this pace, I think we can talk about this team being historically good. And there's always a big difference, right, in being good and being historically good. I think we are on the brink of saying, yep, this is a team that can win 70 games, right? No question. Is this a team that can win 72 games? I think is going to be the fair question that will be maybe a little bit more clear to answer in about 3 weeks.
I agree with you, but I can already say that they're on pace to be a historic team. Their point differential, which I don't know if the listeners know, how many points they score per 100 possessions versus how many they give up per 100 possessions. It's a way to normalize like scoring and stuff with according to pace in each team. They have a plus almost 17
yep.
per 100 possessions, which is astronomical, and I think would probably blow out every past record as far as point differential. They have just been head and shoulders better. Their second best player hasn't played yet this season. I think Shea's already sat out like 10 fourth quarters out of the 17 games they played because they're so far ahead. He's scoring 33 points in 33 minutes a night. I hate to say this, but it looks like they solved basketball on both sides of the ball.
It seems like it. The one stat that I always look at, and let's use this in comparison, I think, to a good team compared to a team that, let me rephrase that, maybe a great team in comparison to a team that we think is pretty good, right? The Lakers, for instance, and I think the Lakers are a good team. I do. I think that they're going to be legitimate. I don't think that they're better than Oklahoma City. But if someone was to tell me they're the second best team in the Western Conference, I would buy that right now. Their assist to turnover ratio is like 1.5. When we take a look at OKC, I think it's like 2.3. Okay, now, I know if you don't really follow basketball a ton, or if you're not really into the analytics of it, you say, that's not that big of a difference. No, that's a huge difference. Assist to turnover ratio right now being plus almost 2.5. James, that's a huge statistic.
100 is gigantic. That means they're taking care of the ball, and it means they're sharing the ball. The fact, again, like, we got the Thunder have one guy who's really going off, and then so many other guys filling in. They know their roles. They run everything. They execute flawlessly on both sides of the ball. And like you said, 2-1, 2.5 to 1, and then 1.5 to 1 sounds like what does it mean? It just means you're not going to turn the Thunder over, and you're not going to just be able to key in on one guy and say we're going to stop Shea because they are spreading that ball around. So they I think Denver is probably the second best team in the NBA just because of Joker and they added the pieces. I had them as my early preseason finals pick. That's Denver, not the Thunder. But already OKC is making me doubt that pick.
Yeah, I agree. Again, James Hollis joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball, first 20 games of the season. Which team are you not buying 20 games into the season? And I'm talking about a team that, the Heat are 11-6. Right now, they're a top five team in the Eastern Conference. We move over to the West. The Suns are 11-6. They'd be a top six team in the Western Conference. Like, I don't buy Phoenix. Right. So what team are you looking at right now and saying, nah, they're not as good as their record says?
I mean, Toronto is 7-3. Like I said, number two in the East. Their point differential is actually really good. And defensively, they have a lot of long athletes. But I think that offense is going to catch up with them sooner or later. I'm with you. It's funny how addition by subtraction works, right? I really think Miami, the stink of last season and the drama with Jimmy, took a huge toll on the Heat players mentally and the drain on that locker room. So even though Miami right now is, I kind of believe that they are back to that quality team that they should be, where they always overachieve and Coach Spo gets the best out of guys. I'd say Phoenix in the West, they'll probably fall off some. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we got Toronto. Now, honorable mention, Golden State came out of the gates looking amazing, and now they're 9-9. They're old, they're creaky. Young teams give them fits because young athletic teams just kind of run circles around them and can wear them out. I think Golden State might, they look really good at the end of last year. That might come home to roost this year with the age of these guys, and they're 9-9. It is what it is.
I agree with you, and I think if we go back to the move that they made last year, we both agreed it reeked of desperation. But it was the correct move at the time based off of the core that they had, right? I mean, you're not going to move on from someone that's generational like Steph Curry. Go all in. Try to figure this out. And the move for Jimmy Butler was the right move. I don't know what Golden State can do this year to make the right move to try to complement the pieces that they have right now because they are too old and they're simply too small. I think that's the case.
Yeah, and Jimmy Butler's really, really good. He's also, like the rest of those guys, really, really old. I don't see how they didn't make the move for Lauri Markkanen when they had a chance. I heard they were balking at putting Podziemski in the move or whatever, which is ridiculous. There are several moves that they passed on that they probably should have made. And again, we have the same issue we had last year. They paid Jonathan Kuminga. Now he's back to the bench, and now they're sending subtle shots at him in the media about not fitting in and all this stuff. So that's. I think until they move on from Kuminga and make make some kind of consolidation trade with Kuminga and some of those other guys to bring in another piece, they're going to have these problems.
Yeah, and let's be clear on the Kuminga deal. They did what they absolutely positively had to do, right? I mean, there are times where moves don't necessarily make a lot of sense, and I've tried to stress this for years here on the show. We have to look at things that teams, you have to do it. They didn't have a choice with Kuminga. They had to pay him. Does he fit the mold of this roster? Absolutely not. And I think if you talk to Warrior fans, they would be more than happy to just move on from Kuminga. But the fact is, they did what they had to do. They had no choice in that realm.
Yeah, to a point. It's all about sliding door moments, right? Come sliding door moments. They held on to him for 4 years. Like they should have moved him after year one or two.
Yep.
And he was all about potential, and they realized he didn't fit. He wasn't, he's not canny with the ball. They realized it. but they kept holding on. And then the summertime came. Instead of making a decision early in the summer, they held on to the very end of the summer, and they held up all their moves, and they didn't add anybody to the roster until, like, October. Like, there's sometimes the biggest mistake you can make is doing nothing, and they did nothing with Kuminga up until the very end when he forced their hand. So it's still, like, not an ideal situation. I think until they work that out, they're going to still be dealing with these struggles.
James Holis again joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, let's talk about the news of Chris Paul retiring at the end of the year. It's certainly time. And, you know, Chris Paul, a lot of people are going to have a lot of different opinions on Chris Paul. I never want to see a Hall of Famer in year 20 go out on a team that is dreadful. And I do believe the Clippers will be better as we get deeper into the season. But let's be honest, right? He's not winning an NBA championship, so it's 20 years without a title. How much does that affect the way you look at Chris Paul's career? Saying that, you know, I don't even know where you place him all time as far as point guards. I don't know if you've given it much thought. But let's say, for the sake of the argument, top six point guard of all time, right? Let's throw that out there. Do you at least look at the fact that he never won an NBA championship and say, damn, missed opportunities for a Hall of Fame career?
I mean, obviously, I think we can look back and you know, second guess all of the Hall of Fame level players' kind of career like that. But is it fair to him? Sure, you're just about your resume. But Chris, and I'll just say this last part of his career, he's horrible this year. He held on probably a year too long. Last year should have been last year for him because he's averaging less than 3 points a game. He looked creaky. He does not look good at all, and it is what it is. But yeah, he's built an incredible career. He's going to be known as a competitor to the point of being an irritation. He even rates on his own teammates, but he's one of the best passers we've seen, one of the best game managers we've ever seen. But again, this shows the limitation of being a 6'1 lead alpha dog without superb athleticism. Because in the biggest moments, he wasn't able to get things done. And maybe even mentally, it got him a couple times. I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm not a big fan of Chris Paul, but I can respect his game. Yeah, he hung on a year too long, and this last year is just like trying to pick the font on the last sentence in a book. It doesn't really matter. But it's sad that he is going out like this. The Clippers look old and creaky, and he is like the face of the Clipper franchise right now. Just too old and a little bit past his prime.
How much different would his career look if the trade to L.A. would have not been vetoed? Trade to the Lakers would not have been vetoed.
So much different. Good chance that he picks up a ring with Kobe. Good chance that once you break through that barrier, and now a lot of players kind of elevate after that championship, right? The confidence and everything elevates, and the pressure's off, and they play with a different kind of freedom. So maybe we've seen another kind of side of Chris Paul. It's just, sliding doors moment. The league saw fit to close that door on him, and for the rest of his career, he was chasing where he was almost, but just not quite good enough.
It's kind of amazing to go back and think about what really would have changed, because I would have liked to have believed that the Lakers acquire Chris Paul soon after they acquired Dwight Howard, and you got to wonder, A, what that does to Kobe's career. Right? I mean, how much longer do we get with Kobe? But aside from that, how many rings does Chris Paul get? And I think you nailed it right on the head. If you play for an organization like the Lakers and you find a way to win a championship, things look drastically different at that stage in his career. Plus, a prime Chris Paul and a prime Dwight Howard together, how much different does Dwight careers look like, right? So, I mean, I think all in all, when you go back and look at Chris Paul's career, that particular veto is going to be a major, major role, which may not have been the case if he'd have found a way to break through in L.A.
Absolutely, and that's probably one of the greatest modern what-ifs, right? We all look at that possible trade that got rescinded as a deflection point in NBA history. It's a really big deal. So kudos to Chris Paul, man. He was an underrated defender, one of the greatest basketball minds. But like a lot of geniuses in their fields, he was also kind of despised for the way he carried himself and he's a little uncouth with the way he dealt with teammates and opposition, so... we won't see another guy quite like him probably. And some people are saying good riddance, but, another chapter down in the NBA history.
And just for reference for Jazz fans, right? Because I remember the debates vividly here in the state of Utah, who was better, Deron Williams or Chris Paul? Like, that was a legit conversation at one particular time. And this was back when Utah, 2008, 2009, 2010, the Jazz were on the brink. Problem was, they kept running into the Lakers, who had Kobe and Powell and Lamar Odom and Andrew Bynum, right? I mean, that was a really, really, really good Laker team. Otherwise, this Jazz squad, maybe they get to the NBA Finals. I want to bring this up for reference because that was at one time a legitimate conversation. Who would you take, D. Will or Chris Paul? D. Will has not played in the NBA since 2017, and Chris Paul is still hanging around. I think it's kind of mind-boggling when you think about that.
Yeah, wait, what was D. Will last year, you said?
2017.
Wow, and even then, I think his last two or three years were really...
they were bleak.
Almost this level of Chris Paul kind of washed up. So, he dealt with some injuries. I want to say hip injuries or
yeah.
something. That was Deron Williams or some kind of... That's what kind of derailed him. But, at his peak, he was great, but the longevity is what really sets Chris Paul apart. You said top six. Some would say he's a top 3-point guard, right? But the rings obviously play a factor. But when you talk this on-court sheer ability and the ability to play the point guard, and he was like one of the last throwback, quote-unquote, traditional point guards where he was setting everybody up first and he would score when needed or if pressed upon, he could hit shots. But, it's definitely the last of a dying breed.
Yeah, I say top six because I don't think there's really any debate at that point in time. But now I'm curious, right? I don't like talking legacy talk until a player hangs it up. Where do you rank him?
I got him probably 5 or 6. I just understand the argument when people say, well, if you look at his actual play on the court, they put him right up there with Isaiah Thomas and the greats like that. Now, obviously, the legacy is part of the ring, and Isaiah Thomas stepped up when he needed to in the greatest moments while Chris Paul never quite got there, you know, so that has to matter. But yeah, other than Magic, Steph Curry, Isaiah, I'd put him right there with a guy like John Stockton, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Both of them the consummate point guards.
Yeah.
So Stockton obviously had the longevity and played at a higher level for longer, deep in his career, but he was, you know, very, very similar player. They'd do almost anything to win. Borderline dirty in the best kind of sports way, just tough as nails. So, he's definitely upper echelon. You know, definitely upper echelon. Other than the three guys I mentioned, Steph, Magic, and Isaiah, you put them right there with anybody.
Yeah, my top three, it's solidified. It's set in stone, right? Magic is number one. Zeke and Steph, put them 2-3 however you want. But those are the top three for me. I was going to ask you, compare him to John Stockton. Who would you rather have, prime CP3 or prime John Stockton?
I think prime CP3, only because we got to see him play at a high level in different systems. And that's not to take away from John Stockton mastering the pick and roll with Karl Malone. But, you know, I'm not calling him a system player, but he thrived in a very specific system. While we got to see Chris Paul play in a myriad of situations, and everyone he went in, he made the team better. So, that's where I go. I'd say probably Chris Paul over John Stockton to me.
Prime CP3 or Jason Kidd?
That's another one that's tough because there were such different styles. Hitting his physicality, great playmaker, a little more adventurous with the ball, right? A lot of turnovers, but get you a lot of assists. Couldn't shoot a lick. I still say that's tough. I think Jason Kidd, the 6'6" and the strong as an ox, superpower, like a more modern Magic Johnson without the shooting. And then again, the moxie. I think he came up big in big moments. Give me Kidd. Give me Kidd, I'll take it.
But we can agree those are the top six, right? Magic, Steph, Zeke, Stockton, CP3, Jason Kidd. I mean, those are the six greatest point guards we've ever seen.
I got to be with you. I know some people want to, when Russ is all said and done, Russ's name has to be kind of tossed in there because of the sheer physicality and the amazing things he's done. But we all know that it's the decision-making. And the decision making and the meltdown that Russ would have that puts him like a half step below those guys.
Simply because of the cancer aspect, I can't put Russell Westbrook anywhere near the name of a John Stockton. I just couldn't do it.
Well, and you know what? I want to push back a little bit on the cancer. I get it because his attitude was snarling, but all his teammates, every single one of them says Russ was a great teammate.
Except in L.A., right? He won't even sign Laker jerseys.
And I think he got scapegoated a little bit.
I do too. I agree with you. I agree with you there.
Yeah, I'm coming around to that because I thought he was a problem. From what I've seen from everywhere else, he had a target on his back in LA.
He is James Olas, always got enough to join us. James, I love the conversations. Before I let you go, where can we find more of you?
Oh, wow. We didn't even get a touch on Klay Thompson and Ja.
Okay, let's end with that. You're right. We've got, but here's the thing. When I hear Klay Thompson talk about Ja, Klay summed it up perfectly. I got nothing else to add to this. Klay Thompson summed up Ja Morant 100% perfectly, right?
My favorite part of that was the Klay response, because it was very, it sounded like a disappointed father.
Yes. Like, how could you question what he said?
Right. The talented son is a talented son who was just messing around in school and getting in trouble. He's not, because he was absolutely right. And I think that's, look, Klay, we're not going to talk too long, much about it. Klay was sticking up for his teammate. Ja had no business on the court with his finger in his face. And Klay summed it up. No accountability. We're all waiting for you to step up and be the star that you're supposed to be. We know you can do it, but you haven't done it. Make it about basketball. And I love that he said it the way he did, because no one can argue with that, man. When is the last time we really got excited about a Ja Morant highlight?
We talked about this a few weeks ago, right? Where is Ja Morant's career headed? And, you know, I love baseball. I'm a huge Major League Baseball guy. I know that you're not a huge baseball fan, but to me, he's become Yasiel Puig. He was a guy that was extremely exciting. I was can't-miss TV. And over the last couple of years, the antics have just really, really hampered his game. And I think even the casual fans have grown tired of him.
And I'm going to give these guys credit, because not so much about the antics, but at one point, Stephon Marbury looked like he was the next big point guard.
Yes, he did.
At one point, there was Steve the Franchise, right? Stevie Franchise looked like he was going to be the next big point guard, athletic and do all the things with the ball. And it all amounted to nothing when they became more about personality than actual basketball, and they weren't making the impact they were supposed to be. And that's kind of where we are with Ja. I hope he either turns it around in Memphis or gets traded somewhere where he can kind of reset his career, because right now he's 26, and you know, just to use the words washed up sounds crazy, but someone posted his stats. He's shooting 17% from three. He played less than half of his team's games in the last 3 years. It's not looking good for Ja Morant, and hopefully he puts a halt on it and gets things turned the right way.
This was the same guy that at one point in time, Stephen A. Smith got on TV and said he should be the face of Memphis, not Elvis. And I laughed at that particular time. Boy, we are a long ways away from that horrible take, aren't we?
Got his sneakers. He was literally one of those three young guys, along with like Ant Edwards and Tatum, that was all set up to be like the face of the NBA and in that discussion. And now you're beefing with a 30-something-year-old Klay Thompson while you're in street clothes. It's not a good look.
James Olas, always kind enough to join us. James, where can we find more of you?
All social medias. Scottie Pippen was my favorite player, so look up the name Snotty Drippin. As an homage to Scottie Pippen, and I'm talking basketball this season. It's a good season, man. We see some really high-quality basketball. I'm excited, even if my Celtics are leaving me wanting more. But, find me and let's talk some hoops.
Always a pleasure, James. I appreciate the time.
You the man, brother. Thanks for having me on.
Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We are live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.